Bluegrass Jam Along is proud to be sponsored by Collings Guitars and Mandolins, each and every one built from the sound up in Austin, Texas. This episode is also brought to you by Peghead Nation, the home of roots music instruction. If you want to improve your playing, join me and thousands of other pickers getting better every day at pegheadnation.com.
Hi, this is Paul Cowart, and you're listening to Bluegrass Jam Along, the podcast for anyone and everyone who plays bluegrass.
Hey, everybody, welcome back. The main interview this week is with Nick Lloyd of Nick Lloyd Double Basses, who made a bass for Paul Cowart. But I thought it'd be really cool just to quickly chat to Paul as well about the bass, about working with Nick, about what he was looking for. And that's what this episode is. So we've got a short interview with Paul coming up. And after that, you'll get to hear Paul play the bass on a track from Hawktail's latest record. So stick around at the end for that. Here comes the interview, and I'll add the track on at the end. So welcome back to Bluegrass Jam Along, Paul Cowart. Thanks for doing this.
Of course. Nice to see you again, Matt.
I chatted to you a few months ago for the podcast about Hawktail's new record, and Nick Lloyd, who made your bass, heard that and got in touch. And I got chatting to him, and I thought it'd be really cool to sort of look at how a double bass is made, because I don't know much about it, and I'm sure some of the listeners don't. But just particularly like an instrument that is made as a specific sort of copy of another instrument and made for you, I thought that'd be fascinating to get a little bit of input from you as well on why you particularly like that bass and sort of working with Nick.
Yeah. I think probably the beginning of it is just that Edgar Meyer has been a huge influence on my bass playing and musicianship since before I studied with him at Curtis and since then to this day. And he plays a very unique instrument, 1769 Gabrielli, from Florence, Italy. And it's compared to the norms in bass making today, it's a slightly smaller body with a normal string length and a low overstand and low projection, which kind of, yeah, that goes against the norms of bass making today. There's a lot of really wonderful basses being made, and that's very exciting. However, what makes Edgar's bass really special and unique, by definition, it stands apart from those norms. So, yeah, I was looking for something like Edgar's bass for years. And found some old instruments that were really wonderful and could have worked, but for something like maybe one of them is just extraordinarily expensive. One of them has just a weak point in one register that's really important to me. And so I wasn't really finding anything I could really be confident about and move forward with. And Nick had been working on making me a bass for a couple of years, and was showing me basses that were a lot like what he had been making, which are more in the vein of the norms of bass making in terms of the size of the body and the projection and all that stuff. So he was determined to make me something that I liked. And so he said, "What do you want?" And I said, "I really wish I had something like Edgar's bass." So he said, "Well, let's copy it." And I'm lucky that Edgar has been a presence in my life, and helped me out with bass playing and music for a long time, continues to. And, So he let us take measurements of the bass and make a copy.
And that's really cool. I mean, it's the idea of replicating, and there's a bit of risk in that, replicating an instrument that you know so well and is, you know, part of that sound that you've heard for years and years and years, like the first time you get to play that, this sort of expectation must be enormous.
Yeah, I mean, I think maybe that's built on an idea that isn't quite actually the truth in terms of, like, if I had really thought about this and realized this, I might have tried to pursue making a copy sooner. The point isn't to make something that sounds just like his bass. For me, maybe it is for Nick. For me, it's just getting the best bass for what I'm looking, the best bass I can get for what I'm trying to do.
Hmm.
That's the point. I mean, almost in a way, like, would it be weird if it sounded exactly like his bass?
Right.
Like, that would even be kind of weird. And you know, it doesn't sound exactly like it. I'm trying to think if anybody, like, you know, Zygmunt Tovich is like this violin maker of great renown who, do any of his copies or, you know, finest instruments sound exactly like one of the things that they are inspired by? I don't even know if that's the point. I don't actually know.
And that's a really cool way of looking at it, sort of being inspired by rather than like it being an exercise and trying to recreate something.
Well, I think in the end, you get what you get. And, you know, experience and expertise, skill, you know, contribute to making something that is objectively fine, you know, but like a fine instrument and sounds like it. But I think in terms of like getting, like landing on it, like a voice that sounds indiscernible from another instrument, I think you just get what you get. But there are features of this instrument that are important to me that do resemble his instrument and help me make music in a similar, use the bass in a similar way. And that's the point. And to me, and that's probably the meat of what I can contribute to this conversation is that, yes, yeah, you're right that there was some expectation and anxiety about trying it once it was finished. But yeah, not expecting it to sound the same, but what can I do with this? You know, get it in my hands. What does it do? What can I do with it is the point. And, compared to all the other modern basses I've played, this has, a very focused sound, and a tenor sort of voice. Doesn't have as much low information obscuring the obscuring what I'm putting into the instrument with my hands. Obscuring the clarity, the articulation, like the diction of the instrument. That doesn't have a bunch of the certain low range that other basses do have that obscure that stuff. In a nutshell, that's what I was particularly after, a bass that didn't, that was clear and focused. And beautiful and sort of powerful.
Interesting. Just you sort of describing a voice there, because both in Hawktail and Punch Brothers, sort of the instruments are arranged as, like, I sort of hear voices when I hear those instruments. Like, whereas if you had a double bass in an orchestra that is surrounded by 75 other instruments, it plays a very different role. And when you've got four or five acoustic instruments played together, the individual voice of each one stands out much more than it would in a string ensemble. And something that's maybe got a bit more like tenor, as you describe it. It's really interesting. I hadn't thought about that as a thing, but certainly, particularly when you play bowed up the neck quite a lot and play a lot of melody lines, something that has that, that makes a huge amount of sense to how I've heard you play it.
Mm-hmm. Well, and actually, it's almost more like in the lower registers where this instrument stands apart, because on a more typical bass in the lower registers is where it really will get muffled and I can play low on this instrument and still be articulate, and the pitch is you can latch onto the pitch. It's all over the instrument. It's not just the upper register, and it's not, And it's not so ringy. Like, a lot of basses these days are kind of ringy. They, like, you play a note and you almost hear a resonance in the instrument, that is kind of alluring to a lot of people. And that's actually not what I'm looking for. That kind of like obscures the clarity to me.
And it's really interesting to sort of talking about, like, partly sort of coming back to just wanting a bass that could do what you wanted it to do, like describing it as a tool. Is that how much it costs and how much time it takes to put together and how much craftsmanship goes into it? It is there to serve how you want to make music, but it's in the, and the way you phrased it was about how, what you put into it with your hands, and sort of flip back to the bit about sounding like an instrument it was copied from. Like, it never will, because that instrument has much older wood in it, but also you're playing it, and like you will sound like you, and Edgar will sound like Edgar, whatever you'll play. You know, like, all great musicians have a voice that is not entirely or even mostly to do with the instrument they play. Like, the instrument can bring it out, and you look for an instrument that amplifies your voice rather than the other way around, I guess.
Yeah, it's kind of a complex thing. And I think my job right now is to kind of just learn as much as I can from the instrument and kind of let it influence me as much as I can. I'm not 18 anymore. But I can try to be. as I come to the instrument, and think about that. It's influencing the way I play. I'll say, yeah, that's happening. I can choose different fingerings. I can play different registers on different strings. I can play a higher register on lower strings. I can achieve like articulation on the instrument in a different way. I'm coming to the instrument. I'm coming towards it as much as I can.
Yeah, and I love that idea of it almost like it's a conversation with the instrument rather than, like, I described it as a tool, which is maybe slightly clumsy in that it responds to, you know, you're basically using it to achieve a function, but actually the way you just described it sounds much more like for you to be learning from the instrument as well, and for that to be an ongoing process of you putting something into it and it puts something into you, and I find that fascinating. Any instrument, any musician who has a long-term relationship with a single instrument, like you think of Tony Rice and his, you know, the Antique, or, you know, there's so many players out there that have a like sort of lifetime relationship almost with one instrument. And I find that fascinating because it's, you know, you get so used to people getting bored and flipping a guitar and getting another one or wanting to try everything. And the idea that somebody might spend, like the bassist Danny Thompson has a bass that I think he calls it Victoria, but he's, you know, been playing for decades. I love Danny Thompson. He's been playing that for decades, you know.
Yeah.
And I just find that really, there's something quite moving and inspiring about that kind of relationship with an instrument.
Yeah. I mean, ultimately, you know, I've been looking for an instrument that does certain things as much as I can find. But ultimately, you play the instrument and you let it guide you as well. I mean, you have to. The music is coming out of that box, so, and it's got to sound like music.
Cool. It's really great catching up with Paul again, and I hope you found that interesting. Do go and listen to the interview with Nick about making Paul's bass. That was a really cool conversation too. This track coming up here is called Updraft, and that is the fourth track of Hawktail's recent record, Place of Growth. And I had a chat with Paul about having a little sample in here so you could hear the bass, and this is the one he was really keen to use as a great example of how the bass sounds. So here comes a bit of Updraft. Thanks for listening. I'll see you next time. Happy picking. Bluegrass Jamalong is proud to be sponsored by Collings Guitars and Mandolins, making some of the finest guitars and mandolins in the world since the 1970s. Visit collingsguitars.com and find out why.